Hello, everybody, and welcome to this new episode of Spanish Loops. Hola, Jorge. How are you?
Hola, Francisco. I'm great. How are you doing today?
Super happy. What about you? How are you doing?
Not bad. Thank you very much indeed. Just hanging around and thinking about things that we have to talk about here, just finding themes, and there is so many around. But it just happened that I just found out a couple of them that we never thought about it. And I believe just for a moment that you're going to freak out, but I know you're going to pay me back with the same thing.
Okay, shoot it. What are we going to be talking today?
Look, Francisco, what about if I interview you today?
Okay, if you interview me today, I'm going to interview you next week.
You see, that's why I said that you're going to pay me back with the same coin.
Okay, so there we go.
All right, so you agree on that? You want to get yourself virtually naked to the whole world? That's an all
Let's listeners? Talk about me.
Okay. Francisco Glaria.
That's me.
That's you. I wish that you guys could see his face, although we are recording this on a video call, but later on we extract the audio. And we edit, and there is a lot of bloopers over there that maybe one day we'll do a chapter about bloopers.
There's going to be some very horrible bloopers.
That's why I have to review them before, you know.
I have to censor.
Yep, true. Okay, Francisco. Francisco Glaria, that is your name. And you are natural from the north of Spain, from Pamplona, which is part of the former Basque country, or the Kingdom of Navarra, let's put it that way. But I would like you first of all to introduce yourself as, you know, just imagine for a moment that someone is in front of you, you are a VIP, and you have cameras in front of you, etc., and everybody is, you know, wanting to know everything about you. Tell us about you as an intro.
Okay, so here we go. Well, as you said, my name is Francisco. Well, my full name is Francisco Javier Eusebio Antonino Rigoberto Fernando.
Excuse me, I beg your pardon?
That's my full name. Then the last names, but that's the name.
No, wait a minute. Are you serious about that?
Yeah, that's my baptism name. But obviously in Spain, we have two names. And my legal name is Francisco Javier, Francis Xavier. I am named after St. Francis. He's one of the founding fathers of the Jesuits, and he was born in the state where I come from Navarra. So I'm named after him. I was born here in Pamplona on February 10th, 1971.
And would you please, before continuing, say again your full name?
Francisco Javier Eusebio Antonino Rigoberto Fernando.
You have no idea how many memes I'm going to do with that.
Well, it's a shame to be named that way, but hey, you know, it's the name of the saint, the name of my grandpa, the name of my mom's uncle, the name of the saint of the day I was born. All of, you know, the typical tradition here
in
Spain.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
You have all of those long names.
Okay, well, so, sorry to have interrupted you. Would you please continue?
Isn't it shocking to have that crazy name? Anyway, so as I said, I was born February 10th, which means that I'm an Aquarius. Not that I believe much in astrology and all of these things, but they say I am a very, very typical Aquarius. Okay? But you know me, so you know if I'm a real Aquarius or not. What else? I studied here in Pamplona. Then I went when I was 17 to the United States. I studied.
Hold on. Wait a minute. Let's go step by step. Tell us about you since the moment you were born. Obviously, you kind of remember those early stages of your life until you were 10 years old. I have like three questions about that time frame. Which is the very earliest thought that you have in your brains printed as your first memory that you can remember, the youngest that you were? Do you have any idea?
Well, when I was born, everybody said that I was a kid with a very, very big head. I was a very big-headed kid who was not ever stopping crying. I would cry 25 hours a day. That's that. My parents, they would lock me in the bathroom because they could not stand me. Okay. We're talking a baby, newborn. It's like, yeah, that was a pain in the... So I was, at the beginning, I was kind of a happy kid. I remember always dancing and singing. And
yeah, but the very first thought that you can imagine about yourself in some scenario, some kind of, I don't know, call it whatever, party or...
Well, right now, for example, what comes to mind, yeah. I was in my grandparents' home in the Pyrenees. They had a big house in the Roncal Valley, beautiful valley. And in front of us, there was, in front of our grandparents' house, there was a lumberjack. So he would have all of these huge trees, all, you know, cut and placed on the floor. And they were always there. And I loved playing there because they were like stages and you could go running up and down. And it was super, super fun. I love that. So probably that's, you know, the smell of fresh cat food and in the village. I think that could be my first memory as a kid.
Mm-hmm. Same time frame until you were 10. Which is your happiest moment? Remember, we're talking under 10.
Under 10. When it was not Christmas night, it was the night of the three wise men. Here in Spain, we celebrate the Epiphany.
Mm-hmm.
And at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, the three wise men walked in our bedroom and woke the kids up. They were there in my room.
Wow.
I mean, I was the happiest man in the world.
What a privilege. The happiest kid in those days, yeah.
The biggest innocence, the most delightful thing.
Okay, and we don't want to be getting into the sad moment, but what would be the moment that you were or you got really angry for something that you wanted or you didn't get or something that, I don't know, whatever situation, but not being, not talking about sad moments, just being angry.
Well, angry, probably, this would be stupid, but with my parents, we had a very small car and we were, at the beginning, we were three kids. And later on, my twin brothers came like 10 years after. So the first 10 years, it was just the three of us, the three older brothers. And when we would get in the car, my older brother, he would always sit in the middle seat on the back, which is where you get the good view of the road ahead. And I will always wanted to sit in there. I was like, why does he get always the good spot?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's my moment.
So you were only three at the time, right?
Yep.
So you are the third of how many?
I'm the second of five.
Second of five. Mm-hmm. And what is the difference between you and your older brother or sister?
So we're all five boys. We have no sisters.
Right.
And the three oldest, we are 11 and 12 months apart. Uh-huh. So when you are 10, my older brother is 11 and my next brother is 9.
Mm-hmm.
And then the little ones, the twins, they came when I was 9.
Mm-hmm. So it was just a happy moment that your parents had. And
well, happy dash planning moment.
Yeah, you're right. Okay, teen years.
Oof, dark years, dark. Ugh, teenage hit it so hard on me. Yeah. I hated school. I hated everybody. I hated myself. I was the tallest kid in the school. I was the fattest kid in school. I needed...
Wait a minute. I mean, whoever knows you, you know that you are tall and skinny, and you just said you are the fattest.
Oh, God. I hate it when people just say, oh, you're a large kid. No, I'm a fat kid. I was a very, very fat kid. I was way over 200 pounds.
Well, nowadays, we all know that we have to be very careful how to use the words because it could be derogatory. But in those days, and especially in Spain of those days, that was a sign of mocking, you know, and it was even funny for everybody. But the one that suffered the consequences was those that mocked were directed to. So I bet that it wasn't a good time for you.
It was not. So that came to, you know, from being a very open and extroverted kid to suddenly become a very dark, quiet. Everybody was like, don't talk to me. I don't want to talk with anyone. I just cried and cried and cried for so many years.
Did you get any help from your parents? Did you know
anything? Didn't know what to do.
They didn't know what to do. So they knew, they were aware about that, but they didn't know what to do.
Yeah. But they were like, what can we do? Nothing, 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 nothing.
Mm-hmm. And what about partners? Did you find any girls that you fancy at the time?
No, I was a very late bloomer about sexuality and all of this. I was, to tell you the truth, I think I was like a little like an angel, asexual. It was like, I had no clue about what was that. The thing is, I was going to an only boys Catholic school.
Yeah.
So there was no relationship with girls. There was no girls to be seen. So,
yeah.
Hey, and in my world, it was just boys. It was my brothers, and the school was only boys. So it was like, testosterone. And I was not good at sports. So I was not good at anything. I was a decent student, not a good student. I was an awful sportsman. Mm-hmm. I hated school.
Wow. Okay. So, did you go to university before you were 20 or just after the 20s?
As I was so down, I found, let's say, comfort in religion. And to me, my junior year of high school, it looked so tempting to become a priest.
You are not serious.
Oh, yes. Oh, gosh. I even asked for the papers to go into the seminary for my senior year of high school. And can you imagine me, Father Fran? So the thing is that when I told my parents, they were, oh, sure, that's perfect. I've got a great option. Many years later, they told me that they freaked out. And the solution to that, it was like, why don't you wait 1 year and finish your high school, but not here in Spain? Why don't you go to the United States?
Mm-hmm.
And they sent me to do my senior year to the United States. And I went to California, to Southern California, well, Bakersfield, in the middle of nowhere. And I went to an American public high school.
Mm-hmm.
Boys, girls, the whole thing. To me, it was, first of all, you know, when I walked in that high school, it was like in the movies. You see, you know, the football players on one side, the cheerleaders on the other side, the weirdos on the other side, the nerds on the other side. It was like, what on earth is this? I mean, all of these tribes, all of these different groups of people that in my school, we had to wear a uniform. So everybody looked the same and we were not allowed to do anything different. So suddenly all of these options came to me. And it was so strange because, you know, first of all, I think that's when when I saw the cheerleaders telling you, give me an A, give me a B, I'll give you my heart if you want, girl. Obviously, they didn't care about me because I was like, oh, the European, the nerd. So I didn't know what group of people I could fit with. And I ended up spending all my year with the weirdos, with the goths, the gothics, you know, all these people.
So from becoming a priest, from wanting to become a priest, you just went to the opposite side, you know, like flipping a coin and getting the heads when you were in the tails.
But the thing is that these people, they would not judge you. They were just, if we want to wear pink hair, we'll wear pink hair. If we want to shave our hair, we'll shave our hair. If we want to wear a skirt, I'll wear a skirt. So suddenly, I saw that you could decide what you wanted to be. And that's when that year and being with these people, I cannot thank them enough because it was like real blooming. It was like, I can freaking care less what anybody has to say about me anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I am a happy person. I was like, I know I'm tall and I'm not skinny and I'm not this and I'm losing my hair. I can care less. And suddenly, by magic or maybe by accepting it, I bloomed. I became a very extroverted person, very, very strong personality now. I finally lost weight. All my weight disappeared.
Just like that.
In a year, I became it was the moment when HIV started, the late 1980s, beginning of 1990s. When I returned back home, obviously this is before internet, before WhatsApp and before pictures. It was one telephone call every 2 or 3 weeks home.
Yeah.
When I arrived home, my parents hadn't seen me for over a year. And they sent a fat kid, and suddenly this skin bone kid came in. My mom thought I had HIV. I'm like, Mom, to get HIV, you should have done something that, unfortunately, I haven't done. So, but you know, the bus mama made me do the test, and yeah, I was negative. But hey, my mama was relaxed after that one.
Mm-hmm. All righty. Okay, now we are jumping into your 20s.
Early 20s.
Yes, we know that there is a very funny story when you met your future wife.
I met my future wife. So yeah. After my senior year of high school, I did 3 years in LA. And it was 1992 when I returned. And that was the Olympic Games in Barcelona and the World's Fair in Seville.
Yeah.
It is that four of our friends, we were going to go to Seville to the World's Fair. Like a week before I made it to Spain, one of my friends broke an ankle and he couldn't come. But my friends were like, don't worry, we have it solved. Somebody else is coming instead of our friend. And I was like, okay, sure. So who's the guy that's coming with us? Do I know him? Oh, no, it's not a guy. It's a girl. I was like, what the hell, guys, are you talking about? We don't need no girl with us. We're going to go there to get the girls. So I'm like, I hate that girl. I hate her. I didn't even meet her. I hated her. So when I met her, I could not hate her more. And she thought that I was the most stuck-up kid in the world. I was like, disgusting. So we were in Seville for about 10 days, every day fighting, every day. I would say, oh, let's go to the Canadian pavilion. They have whatever they had back then. And the girl, she would say, oh, I want to go to the French pavilion because they have wagon. Girl, you know, you are here, guest. You should not be. We were always fighting, always, always, always fighting. The thing is that after that World's Fair, we returned back to Pamplona. And, you know,
so she was from Pamplona as well.
She was from Pamplona. I met her in Seville.
Yeah.
But she was from two blocks away from my parents' house and I never met her.
Two blocks away and you never saw her before?
Never saw her ever.
Wow.
He turned into something different. And here we are still going on. We got married many years later. And now we have three kids. So, yeah, that was my 20s. The 20s were kind of crazy. By the way, I married when I was 29.
And you got married. And now we're getting into your 30s.
Okay.
The first time that, well, not the first time, I'm sorry. Your first kid, Fiji. How old were you when she was born?
So she was, we were 31. I was already 31. I know I was 30.
Mm-hmm.
And she was, you know, 2000. She was born in 2001. 2001 Space Odyssey. That's what she was for us. The whole world changed. I mean, I fell in love with my daughter before she was born. Okay? So I was like the happiest father in the world.
Mm-hmm.
But oh my God, so many things change. You just like, how do they give you the, you know, the credit card or the, I don't know, the passport of you become a father? I don't know. Suddenly you are not worried for what happens to you. It's whatever happens to your kid. And it was, when she was born, it was right after September 11. So I think the whole world was very emotional and I was extra emotional. So it was like super protective, super, it was very hard. It was joy, pure joy and love, but it was hard. I must say that it was not easy.
Well, yeah, I mean, having a kid, I have never experienced that feeling, but having a kid must change entirely your life. And especially when you're giving love, unconditional love, without expecting anything in return. And obviously, if you have a partner, in this case, your wife, that you both were on the same page, like just raising your kid in that way, that must be a great, immense feeling. Well, what about your second kid? What about, what's his name?
Nicolas.
Nicolas. Saint Nicolas. Was it because he was born in the in the St. Nicholas Day, or?
No. He was not born or conceived in the day of St. Nicholas.
Oh, wait a minute. Let me get back to your oldest daughter, Thigi. How come that name?
Okay, so the thing is that when Aino and I, we were on our honeymoon, we went to a friend's house in LA, Courtney, and she had a daughter. The name of the daughter was Antonia. She was like a year and a half. The thing is that one day we told Courtney, my friend, hey, do you mind? We can take the kid to kindergarten. So we went there, and in the moment we reached the kindergarten, she started screaming, Fiji, 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 I'm here, Fiji. And suddenly this girl from the Fiji Islands came running. I mean, she was dark skinned with super curly hair, beautiful smile. Antonia came out of the car. They started hugging each other. Fiji, Fiji, Antonia, I love you. I love you, Fiji. And I was like the most beautiful two girls in the world. So as a joke, I said to Ainoa, you know, whenever we have a kid, if it's a girl, she should be named Fiji. And when we got pregnant, we didn't have a name. So I would call the tummy, you know, hi, Fiji, how are you doing? So then one day people ask, hey, do you have a name for the baby? And Ainoa said, yeah, she's going to be named Fiji. And everybody was like, what?
I was going to say, I think it was a shock for everybody.
Oh, my mom and my mother-in-law, they went nuts. They called each other and they were screaming on the phone. It's like, what's going on? That's not a Christian name. That's not a name. That's, oh my God. Okay, so we said, okay, let's give her a different name. We're going to call her Anna, like the name of the mother of the Holy Mary, Fiji. So my daughter's name is Anna Fiji. Everybody knows her as Fiji.
As Fiji, right, yeah. Curious.
Well, as Fiji. Nicholas, it was just because we liked it. It was nothing. He was the most beautiful baby. He, when he was born, he was like, whatever the due date was, he was over the due date like 5 days. And he was there. And finally, I know, I started delivering, you know, having the contractions and the whole thing. It took him 24 hours to come out.
For Ainoa.
Well, the thing is that the doctor told us, if he's not out in an hour, we have to do an emergency C-section. You know, yes. It's like,
yeah,
that baby has to come out.
Yeah.
So Ainoa told me, and the doctor, can everybody please go out? I'm going to talk with the baby.
Oh, seriously?
Yeah. In half an hour, that baby was out. Yeah, I don't know what mama told the baby.
Just on her own?
No. But, you know, I not told Nicholas, hey, it's your time to come out. We want to see you. We want to love you. Come outside. Oh. And he came out. He was just waiting for mama's permission, I guess. I don't know. I was like, and well, he's been that, you know, very relaxed kid, always like, oh, it's okay, no stress. So, hey, he's been that way.
So it sounds to me like the kind of kid that might see a butterfly flying around him and watching the butterfly all the time.
That's Nicholas.
Okay. And in your late 30s, you had a panic attack, or it was in your early 40s when something I expected.
So we were... Two was enough, was okay. Yeah. But both of us were like, yeah, we're missing a third one, but no, should we? No, we shouldn't. Well, yes, let's have another. No, let's not. Well, in that, yes, let's have it, but well, let's not. And we hit it. It was like jackpot. It was like, really? Can we hit that fast? So he came and he, little Lucas, he came on, and he is the joy of the family. He's always happy. He's always in good mood. He is, I don't know, he's the bright side of life. Uh-huh. He's, I don't know, he's super positive, and he's like, yay, not very realistic, okay? His internal brain is very fancy and very, yay.
Well, who's a teenager's internal brain is not realistic. Come
well,
on.
You're right. But this one is like, oh my God, you need to settle down, little boy.
All right. So, and yes, the last part of this surprising interview in this chapter, I need to go back in time a little bit just to get to today's, which is when you were in Bakersfield and then you returned back to LA to study again. you had, I mean, your career was something to do with textiles. Is that right?
Yeah. So my family, my grandparents, they had a retail factory. Then it became some retail stores. And I was the second child in the family. My older brother, he was going to be taking care of the accounting. And I was going to be taking care of the creative part, you know, the buying, the selling, all of that. Mm-hmm. So that's what I studied in LA. So when I came back to Spain, that's what I did. I worked for my family's company for 11 years almost.
Oh, wow.
Then the company was sold to another company.
Huh?
And I found myself doing nothing. I was like, okay, what do I do now? I was offered a good job, but it was too much traveling around the world. And I was studying art history at that moment. So I finished art history. And tourism came as a mistake, I guess, or as a gift. And here we are, still running a tour guide company that at the beginning was just local guiding. Then it has turned into all of this, especially for the, as we are from Pamplona, the city of the Riding of the Bulls, we organize so many things for the Riding of the Bulls, balconies and all of these things. Then Ricky Steves came to my life, appeared like 14 or 15 years ago. And I started leading tours for him here in the Basque Country. Then when COVID came, it was like, oh, what's going to happen now? So I started creating my own tours with Traveling Steps. It's when we started this podcast, Traveling Steps. And, well, here we are.
Mm-hmm. But you have a special, well, not special, just a specific site on the social media just for the Running of the Bulls, which is called?
Pamplona Fiesta on Instagram and Facebook. The thing is that it's a totally Pamplona, different market.
You said Pamplona Fiesta, right?
Fiesta. Okay. Yeah. The thing is that really has nothing to do with the guests that come for that week of the year with the guests that I work with the rest of the year. Mm-hmm. The people that come for the Running of the Bulls is much younger people. It's a once-in-a-lifetime event. You know, it's bucket list, check, gone. Mm-hmm. While the touring is more, you know, you can do
constant.
Most constant, and you have more contact with people through the podcast, through the newsletter, through the Facebook, which is what I like. I mean, the Running of the Bulls, it's fun. It's 1 week a year that you work all year round to get it. But really, it comes, it goes. That's it. You don't have a contact.
It comes and goes, Francisco. But I remember that a couple of years you were so generous that you invited me to be there in exchange of helping you working a little bit there. I loved it. Don't get me wrong. But I was just myself the 3 or 4 days I stayed there. I was so stressed. I could not imagine how you could be being in charge of so many balconies that you are in charge of during that week with so many people and dealing that honestly, I really admire your patience with everybody. And I just thought to myself, I wouldn't be able to do this. But it is, I guess that as the date approaches, it gets more and more stressing, isn't it?
Yes. I mean, right now, you know, we're sort of selling balconies the day after the Run of the Bulls. Today, the Run of the Bull ends on July 14th, we start selling tickets and everything. But the closer it gets, people start getting stressed and people, it's like, did I get a balcony? Is it for real? Obviously, they're coming to a city that is crazy and they don't know what's going on. They don't know if what they have booked is for real, if it exists. Can you send me a picture? Can you relax? It is okay. You're going to be fine. Don't stress. But yeah, everybody calls you and everybody, it's fine. It's a great, great week.
Well, so I'm very well organized, I have to say. Well, chicos out there, we have forced, let's say that way, Fran to get kind of commas naked, you know, virtually here a little bit, just to let everybody know a bit more about him. And well, Francisco, I just want to thank you for opening your world to everybody, and I have discovered some new things about you that I didn't know. Well, we met when we started both of us working for Rixties, that's some years ago, right? But I guess in that there is a part of your life that obviously is going to remain private, obviously. Guys, out there is a very dark side. It's like, nah. I am your father.
Well, that's what I tell to Lucas. Luke, I am your father.
Well, yeah, because Luke is Lucas.
He's my son, so I'm Luke's father.
And also, you're a freak of Star Wars.
I love Star Wars. I might say yes.
Right. Well, Francisco, so we have said if anyone is interested here in do the running of the bulls, it's Pamplona Fiesta. Okay, you just have to Google that. But let's know about your tour company, which is?
It's Traveling Steps. The best thing to contact me is to sign in for my newsletter. I send like a couple of emails, very short emails every week, telling what I'm doing, what podcasts I'm publishing, what articles I'm writing, and a little bit of what's going on with my life. I also do some Facebook live shows. So if ever anybody wants to be in contact, yeah, the best thing is to sign in. Just go to travelingsteps.es and you find a form where you can sign in for the newsletter.
There you go, guys. So, Francisco Glaria, thank you so much. And chicos out there, we are going to say goodbye for today. And we hope to wait for you for the next chapter, supposedly to be next week.
Francisco. Yes, it's going to be next week, Jorge. And I am going to interview you. So be ready.
Chicos, adios.
Adios, amigos.
Bye.
See ya.
And as usual, we want to thank all our listeners for being there every week, letting us sharing our talks. Follow us in Spanish Loops in Facebook, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or your favorite platform.
And in Instagram, you can find us as the Spanish Loops Podcast, no spaces, all together. If you want to find us the quickest way, just Google Spanish Loops Podcast and you will find us. Hasta la vista, amigos.
See you next week.